This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., and we're going to see whether or not he's getting the message from Coleman.
Apparently, Coleman is pretty focused on the lights. It could be the interstate lights. It could be the Crescent City Connection ones that we were supposed to announce, but we had a small issue. It could be the
you just nailed it. Bingo. He had a special date that night to watch those lights go on, and you let him down. Hadn't forgiven you.
I don't know. That's crazy because they've been working like perfectly. They were beautiful. We took our mother-in-law on the Natchez last night to kind of do the touristy thing. I'll tell you, man, it's first of all, it's a fun thing to do.
Sure.
But it was beautiful. But now with the bridge lit up, it was just stunning going down the river, you know, down to Chalmette and St. Bernard and having that glowing purple in the background. It's pretty neat. And then after that, Newell, we're going to do the high rise and we're going to do the Huey P. So we're going to become, you know, it's going to be all of the lights, just like Coleman said.
Absolutely. And I love them. I really do. I think they're a nice little touch, right? Separating yourself from others.
Yeah, well, you know, and you just think about all the ways that you show the city, a city typically in B-roll or in postcards or in films. You know, you need those iconic moments in the skyline to kind of anchor it. And, you know, we always show the dome, which is, you know, a spectacular piece of architecture. But now that bridge gives us something to kind of come and zoom into. So I think it's going to – we said it was going to be an instant icon, and I think that that seems to be the case. So, a lot of credit to DOTD for getting that thing up. And, you know, next we'll do the next bridge.
Absolutely. Goodell was in town, Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, this past Friday. We were actually broadcasting live from there, and he visited New Orleans, took a tour of the facility, and got to see the renovations for the first time. Folks had thought he had seen some of it before, but it turns out he did, and it was the first time, and he seems to really have liked what he had to see.
Oh, I didn't realize it was his first time seeing it. Yeah, then I think he, you know, when he said that, you know, I think his quote was something like, "Look around, it's absolutely miraculous what you've done with the dome." I agree, and I got to tell you, Newell, having been to a lot of the other stadiums, I would take our $500 million that we've put into getting this 50-year-old stadium up to its current specs over the $2 billion for one of these generic new ones any day. It feels fresh. It's open now they've replaced those ramps, and the fact that you can walk to it, I think we're spoiled. If you want to understand what other stadiums are like, go and try to watch a 49ers game, which is actually in San Jose, not even in San Francisco. We're really blessed to have this stadium downtown, and lucky to have the money that LACD and the state and the Saints have put into it.
And you can't park near a lot of these stadiums either. I mean, 49ers Stadium is in the middle of a neighborhood. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, it's... I was talking to the gentleman who was CEO of Visa, who was in charge of running the deal when they had it in New York City at the Meadowlands. And he was describing to me what it was like trying to trying to get people to take mass transit to go out to that. And he said it was just a disaster because... nobody wants to go to a game in the middle of the swamp in New Jersey anyway, and it was cold, and so we're very lucky to have the stadium. And I think another thing that we have to remember about how we got here today is that Roger Goodell, although our relationship with him has been fraught, he was really one of the key people, along with Tagliabue, who absolutely 100% had our back after Katrina, and there was never a question of the Saints not coming back to New Orleans because they weren't going to let it happen. And, so everything that's happened since then, I understand, but we do have something to be thankful for to the NFL and to Goodell for maintaining the legacy here. And then, of course, Mrs. Benson, who the fact that she understands the Saints not just as a business, but to me, I almost perceive it as a spiritual endeavor, a spiritual calling for her, is incredibly important, because when you read about what's happened in Oakland, where over the past 5 years they've lost every single one of their professional sports teams, and you kind of consider how devastating that's going to be to Oakland, you know, the importance of the Saints and the Pelicans to New Orleans, I would argue, is 10x more important. And the fact that she is, by all accounts, 101% committed to their future here is... it's worth thanking Mrs. Benson and the Saints for.
Well, yes, and there's no doubt about that. But also, you know, I don't underestimate the value of what this community has done as well. Oakland deserved to lose the Raiders. They deserved to lose the A's. They repeatedly are failing on just about every front there is when it comes to quality of life issues. They are so disconnected with reality that they don't know which way is up. And not unlike every other business, you can't survive in that context, right?
No, it was an arrogance that allowed them to do this. And, yeah, they don't get to have nice things anymore. And I think it's a great point, Noel, because when you think about the challenges that we've had in our community, for example, with crime over the past few years, which is a huge issue for the Saints and the Pelicans, because they're trying to get people in seats and suites, and that requires residents and companies who can afford the suites. We came together as a community with things like the NOLA Coalition to make a difference, and as a result, we're now, although it's not perfect and we've had some challenges recently, overall, we have the fourth fastest decline in violent crime in the country. The community came together to do that. The community is coming together to do the Super Bowl. We were planting trees this past weekend out on Crowder Boulevard in New Orleans East. That's a community who understands that it's a collective effort, and that being arrogant, aloof, or, you know, saying you're going to win the battle but lose the war is not the way to go. That's not a thing here. So, no, you're right. It's a symbiotic relationship. I was interviewed the other day by somebody from CNN that's doing a piece on the Saints, and he said, you know, describe the Saints to me. And I said, they're kind of a secular religion. I mean, when you think about the definition of a religion is not rational. It's based on faith. It's based on identity. And I think the way that we feel about this team, you know, which we sometimes describe in religious terms, like faith or believe, it's because it is a secular religion that binds us all together.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like our Mardi Gras celebration and other celebrations that we have here, except these are, what, 11 celebrations a year when the Saints are playing here, and the remainder of when they're not playing here that we come together in our homes in so many different ways. And obviously, it is something that we enjoy doing together across all races, ethnicities, age groups. It doesn't matter. And then you look at the number of people in the stands that are dressed up. You would swear it was Halloween. but it's not.
Yeah, no, it is true. We just downsized, and you know, one of the rooms we had to address was the costume closet, and I don't. That's not a thing. That's not a designation on a house plan in most other places in the universe, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Kids' room,
no doubt.
Study, costume closet.
So, Mike, let's move to a little quick update. French Quarter, what's going on? 74 days out. It's counting. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but the month of November flew by.
Well, it always does.
Here we are.
And 74 days is actually being generous, because that's till kickoff, and the Super Bowl starts the week before, so it's really 60-something, 66, 67. And then when you consider the timeline for getting projects done, we really are kind of in the crunch of the last week or two. If we don't get things started now, they're not going to be done by the end of January. It's just the timeline, critical path order of operation reality. So now we're going to be really focusing on the French Quarter. On December 2nd, the notice to proceed to do the right-of-way, the roads in the French Quarter is going to start. There's going to be Charters, it's going to be Iberville, it's going to be a number of the other cross streets like St. Anne and St. Peter all getting done. There's specialty sidewalk work that's going on in the French Quarter right now. We're beginning to install new lights, so all the lights are going to be replaced and are going to be uniform. We're also going to be stringing cafe-style lights in some of the alleys to change them from alleys to more attractive venues. There's this project we're doing with the DDD called the French Doors Project, where we are putting in new lighting, new facades, and murals in the 100 blocks. So those 100 blocks are going to be beautiful instead of terrifying. But probably, and I'm proud of all these things. There's the homeless work that continues. There's quality of life streets. But the one that I'm probably most excited about is we've had street signs printed for the French Quarter, and now we're moving to contract to get those put up. So for the first time, I can't remember ever there being street signs in most of the quarter. There's actually going to – I hope it doesn't take some of the fun out of it. But we're going to have we're going to have street signs. So you're going to – right?
I'm just thinking of all the drunken games that you play without having the street signs up in the court.
Yeah, I mean, are people going to be upset at us? You're ruining the French Quarter. You're destroying the culture.
Exactly. No, I'm sure
Disney.
I'm sure there will be some. Yeah, a street sign everywhere. Would that qualify as gentrification? I don't know, a street sign.
Absolutely. If you want it to be, it definitely is. I'm sure that we're going to get attacked, in Gambit or something about it. So, as my father-in-law used to say, Newell, what you can do, what you can do.
Yes. Michael, just finished the third extraordinary session, 2024. We come out with a new tax package. I know we're going to talk more about this with Susan Bonnet-Bourgeois in the back half of the hour, but your thoughts?
I think that we ultimately got to something that is going to be, let me put it this way. At the beginning, we were talking about, is the right way to attack tax reform to try to shoot the moon and do the entire thing in one fell swoop, or is it to try to be incremental and continue to make good progress and put out positive messaging? And my answer was, everybody since Buddy Romer who's tried to shoot the moon has failed because it's just politically close to being undoable because of all the entrenched interests over, frankly, 100 years. But, we applauded the governor and Richard Nelson for their ambition and having the reach exceed the grasp. What we ended up with on the backside is something that looks more like an incremental positive step. Probably the most significant one in all of this, or maybe two, but the most significant one is the personal income tax rate coming down from a top rate of 4.25% to a flat 3% personal. My sense is that that will help us when we're trying to sell the state to individuals and to companies. Getting rid of the franchise tax is also a really nice thing because the franchise tax was basically a tax for the privilege of doing business in Louisiana, which seems like a strange thing. We'll see what happens with the inventory tax. I think that's still to be told how that plays out. Parishes now have the option of opting out in exchange for getting a one-time payment, but each parish is going to have a very different approach to that depending on how important that inventory tax has been to their revenue mix. But I think the overall message is that Louisiana is serious about creating a simpler and more attractive tax code. That's a message we can tell now to the world. We're definitely going to go up in the rankings from the Tax Foundation. So the sausage that ultimately was made, thanks to the governor, thanks to the leadership of Cameron Henry as well, and many others, Richard Nelson, I think it's a decent breakfast sausage that we can eat and go about our day.
So, Mike, I'm going to ask Susan this same question, but I'll ask you now. How do we market that we are now the highest sales tax state in the country?
Yeah, that's the awkwardness in this, and it does seem counterintuitive that that you would raise taxes to lower taxes. Now, when you dig into that, the reality is that there still are exemptions for at the state level anyway for basic needs like food and medicine. I think the reality, Newell, is that you just don't market it. I think it just becomes part of the background noise, and you focus on income tax. And what I can tell you is that when we're marketing the state, what folks focus on is the personal and corporate income tax. And by the way, sorry, the corporate income tax has been brought down to a flat 5.5 from a top rate of 7.5. And so from a marketing, given what we have to spin, it's easier to spin a flat 3% personal, flat 5.5 corporate with a very high sales tax rate with exemptions than what we had before. But no, the point of this whole thing is that if you really want to be like Texas, you have to double our property tax. And that's never been on, right, on up for discussion. The homestead exemption, the most sacred of the sacred cows, right, has never been up for debate. And until we really get into that, if we don't balance the budget using property taxes, which in my mind are better taxes because they're local control taxes, what are the options? You've got, hotel motel tax and sales tax, and that's how it plays out.
I think there's the removal of a whole lot of things. It's just kind of curious. I understand that this thing is completely complex, and I applaud the governor for attempting to do this. And I get that, we improve our grade on the tax foundation. But I think it's going to highlight something that may come back to haunt us with voters. We go up in the standings only because we did a tax swap and we spread the burden amongst consumers.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think that's a healthy analytical approach, to this. And I think consumers are going to catch on. Oh, well, okay. The better it is for corporate America means that the worse it is for us as consumers. And that's how we're going to get to the motherland. And what's going to be interesting to see, and I keep hearing this, but the incremental change that was caused, I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can be. I don't see, and maybe Susan has some data otherwise, but I don't see how that's going to translate into a lot of businesses picking Louisiana over other states that still have more favorable corporate tax rates.
The key thing here, Newell, is that only zero is zero, and there is something mm-hmm. binary about being able to say I've got zero, and we just couldn't figure out a way. Without getting into property taxes and shifting the burdens to locals, to local parishes, I don't know how you get there. So no, it is. I think this is a case of not letting the great, get in the way of the good, and we can definitely debate, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
I think there's a lot of things, lost carryover, accelerated depreciation. There are other things that businesses have the benefit of that individual consumers don't, that if there was more parity in the way that we looked at that, that you make up those differences. But those things weren't even on the table, I think consumers at some point in time are really going to start to band together and understand how this equation works.
That's the question. You don't want it to become a consumer versus big business or a class type of dichotomy.
No, you don't.
Because
that's my concern.
That's not helpful. Yeah, I hear you.
So it's going to be interesting. We'll talk more about that. And I hope that you engage in the conversation with Susan when she
if
comes
she
on
if
well.
She lets me, she kind of, I don't know, ever since she got the highfalutin job, she kind of
she's
tells
put you
me
in
to
your
stand
corner.
Down a lot. Mm-hmm. She's like, hey, yeah, and she shushes me. She might even shush me on air, which is just humiliating. No, Susan's the best, so I'll stick around. But
All right, we'll be right back with Michael Heck and Susan Bonnet Bourgeois. Folks, stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. And, Michael, we have a special guest.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have Susan Bourgeois, who is Secretary... Oh, man. Oh, man. Is that a minority... Okay. Noah, why don't you just go for it? Okay.
That's not me.
Everybody, Susan.
Warming up. So thank you for handling that for me.
Susan, I couldn't help
about LED.
I couldn't help but do that. And Coleman participated. But go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just going to talk about her being fantastic and forward-leaning and Partrick-centric and results-oriented and the great transformation of LED, but I guess you still have to tell that herself.
Never
well,
mind,
now
right?
I won't shush you anymore, right?
Susan Bader Bourgeois, thank you for joining us, LED Secretary, in spite of all of the shenanigans that we do on the front
end. Right. Everyone's a little punchy today, I see.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well, and we hope that you have
y'all
a great
as well.
Holiday
thank
season.
You.
So, Susan, we just come out of the tax reform special session. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, Noah, I heard a little bit about what y'all were talking about, but I think, you know, first big picture, which is where I sort of want to start, is one of the things I have been saying since I took this opportunity about 10 months ago is that more than anything, Louisiana needs a narrative change, right? We have, in many respects, we have gotten in our own way as it relates to telling the story of opportunity here and really getting out of our own way. And so from a big picture perspective, I would say this really gave us a very significant step forward in that narrative change, right? When we started this process, you know, Secretary Nelson and sort of brought to me and the governor and a big team of people early on the concept that if we do these things, we could potentially move from the bottom 10th, which is where we are in the Tax Foundation rankings, to dramatically higher. The way we launched the package, it would have gotten us around top 10. The way we ended up now will still be very, very strong. And so that narrative change is critically important as we go out there and sell Louisiana. So that's the big picture. All the details, which I know y'all have talked about a little bit, and we'll keep talking about them for the next half hour or so, they're important as well. But the narrative change is what I'm grabbing most right now.
I agree with that, by the way. I think it's an opportunity to talk about it in a positive way. So I apologize, but I do agree that that's the 38,000-foot win.
Would it be fair to say that what we did actually was a tax swap as opposed to a tax cut?
Well, I guess that's all semantics. And if you would say because we are, for the most part, by all hypotheticals we've looked at, revenue neutral, then sure, you know, then that is one way to describe it. But I would say it was really... it was a change in the way we do things and a change in the way that we have the ability to create a bigger pie. You know, that's what we kept saying over and over again, is that when we went through these conversations, we wanted to be very careful to not just keep talking about slicing up the same pie and how we were going to slice it and how we put policies in place to create a bigger pie. And so the fact that it's revenue neutral, sure, technically, I guess you could say it's a tax swap, but in reality, this is a major restructure, and I think that is a very fair assessment of it.
How do you deal with, you know, local government? That's where I come from, and as the tax collector, I was very sensitive about what the ceiling was going to be for local government relative to sales taxes, and when the state decides to go out and consume a penny. That obviously reduces the ceiling for local government. We now are the highest sales tax state in the country. How do we square that up? Because, I mean, you know, a lot of the mandates that come out of the legislature, obviously, if that are unfunded, that are placed on local government, if that was eliminated, it wouldn't be as important, but that's never going to go away. And we're going to have a real difficult time, I think, for local government being able to stand up and stay ahead of the curve with the ceiling dropped. I mean, there will be little or no appetite to go add to this sales tax number, which on average in this state now is going to be right around 10%.
So So, there's a lot in what you just said, Noel, and you, as you prefaced it, you know very well, coming from local governments and coming from your role in Jefferson Parish, the power of the process we've created. And when I say we, I really mean Huey Long, right, where local governments mm-hmm. rely very much on state policy and coming to that building, right, and either asking for the ability to manage their own budgets in different ways or fighting to retain it. And I think a lot of what we did this session begins, and I'm saying begins on purpose, right? Begins
right.
to get us all thinking in a way that we have to train us all to be different. We have to, the way we started talking about this process early on is that, we're still very much living under a tax code, or were a tax code and a tax process that Huey Long created 100 years ago, and we have tweaked ever since. We haven't philosophically or fundamentally changed it. And I think this session, we went a long way. And you again, well know the amount of, sheriffs and local government who were very represented in this session and made sure their voices were heard and their concerns were alleviated in some ways and not in others. But we have to start that process. And I think we did here. And I think we have to continue to make that call that local governments need the ability to create budgets that serve them, serve their people, serve their constituents, serve themselves. But that shouldn't all be a reliant on Baton Rouge, and it certainly shouldn't be driven by Baton Rouge. And that's a fundamental change for Louisiana, and it's not going to happen in 1-2.5-week session, but we went a long way.
Well, but the most fundamental change that other states have come to the realization, Michael pointed it out before, when you talk about property taxes in Texas, there is a state property tax. The state of Louisiana does not participate in property taxes at all. You know as well as I doubt very seriously whether there's ever going to be a political appetite in this state to change that. It's just not going to happen. And that is really the elephant in the room. And we try to shift that responsibility and burden and blame local government, but this is all about at the state level. And the only way that any of this is going to end up balancing out and getting us to where we think we can get relative to no state income tax, get the corporate franchise tax gone, reduce corporate taxes, and all of these issues that all add up into huge numbers with inventory tax as well, is the state has to get into property tax field, and they're not going there. In my view.
I'm sorry. I want to defend your honor for a second here. I agree that one avenue, not that it's defending, I think that one avenue is the state getting into the business of property taxes. The other is just the burden of property taxes shifting more to the local parishes and just increasing property taxes in exchange for lower income taxes, right, which is what I think happens at the Texas level. But that's, again, it's politically, that's a huge lift, because
that's not at the local level. They have a state property tax. We don't. And that
right,
is the fundamental
do it at the
difference.
Local level.
If we do it at the local level, it goes to the locals. I mean, not the state. That's a difference. They have a local property tax and a state property tax. We don't. And that's a huge
number. But we have
these
things like the inventory tax that are about shifting there, that are backdoor ways of getting state resources to local parishes. So there's a dependency on Baton Rouge that, like Susan said, that Huey Long set up a century ago. Anyway, I'm sorry, Susan, but I'll hang up with your answer.
But the point is that on the balance sheet, the only big ticket item out there that they can really go grab that's going to make a significant impact and oomph is a state property tax. We all know it. We don't want to admit it. We don't want to talk about it. But that is the number. And we're always going to have these exotic schemes and taxing to work around the fact that there's no appetite to do so. Plain and simple.
Well, I think a lot of what you said in the last 10 minutes sort of feeds both the lingering argument, but then the prospective argument, which is you just said this is, you know, where our sales tax is, it's not going to make us an outlier. Does it make us the highest in the country? Yes, but we're not an outlier. Tennessee is at almost 10%. Arkansas is at almost 10%. Alabama is at 9.3%. So it's not as though we are such an outlier in that regard. Don't love being first there, but we're not so much of an outlier that it's dangerous, right? But to your point, everything that we do here in Louisiana, and, you know, it's politics and it's this way everywhere, maybe a little bit more Louisiana here than in other places, but there's always a constituency, there's always a sacred cow, there's always a, there is or isn't going to be the political appetite to do something. I agree with everything you're saying. You know, the homestead exemption is the issue, the property tax is the issue, the how we fund local government, all those things are issues. The amount of our sales tax, issues. And, you know, I saw it in this session, and I was incredibly impressed by it. There were some constituencies, if you will, that I don't want to say stood down, but there were a lot of folks affected by what we did in the last 2.5 weeks. You know, I believe the greater good was achieved in all of this. But there were a lot of people who were pulling at the rope to make this better in general than better for them. And that was a different feeling than I've been around on an office legislature for a very, very long time. And that was a very right. different feeling. And I think the legislature handled that remarkably well. And it was different. Was it, you know, was it us to Iowa? No. Sorry, Iowa. But was it different? It was.
Well, that's encouraging to hear. I mean, because I, like you, not recently, have spent a lot of time up there on tax issues through the Jindal years and, you know, represented local tax collectors and engaged in these debates over what is the best way to address this situation. And it's rare, I think you would agree, Susan, that has happened up there. So that's encouraging to hear that.
Yeah, you know, it was a different process this time. It still had lots of shades of how we do it and how we're used to doing it. But it was a different process.
Yeah, so, and that's not this administration's fault either, you know, and I just want to make that clear. These are hands that these administrations are dealt, and I'm glad you brought up that it goes back to the Huey Long days that set out a structure that, you know, was encouraged, like I said earlier, these exotic taxing schemes to get around things because, you know, the appetite for the revenue because of the deviations and the lack of stability in oil and gas in this state and, you know, the challenges that flow out of that. All right, we'll continue this conversation when we come back. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., as well as Susan Bonnet Bourgeois, LED Secretary for the State of Louisiana. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. We're back with President and CEO of GNO Inc., Michael Heck, as well as the LED Secretary for the State of Louisiana, Susan Bonnet Bourgeois. Susan, I'm sure you're already hearing from folks as the results of this most recent session. What are you hearing?
You know, we're hearing, so, you know, our world is, from a 9-to-5 basis, is all business, all industry, you know, a lot of site consultants who do the work in this space. And we've already gotten several phone calls from the people around the country who pay attention to this saying, what have you done? This is big. How can we learn about it? You know, we're in the process of scheduling a bunch of Zooms with people around the country to tell them about the changes and what it means. You know, and that's wildly positive, right? We were already getting some attention not as a department, but as a state because of the governor's insistence on restructuring the department and how we really go about economic development in Louisiana. And now they're paying heightened attention because they want to know what we just did, and they want to really talk through it. And a big piece of what we're going to do in the upcoming regular session, you know, we have the ability now as a department and a state to reimagine our tax incentives to have them align with our newly the strategic plan that the the restructure is allowing us to get to. We can really align. Where are we incentivizing companies and industry to come here? Where does Louisiana have the most opportunity? And the folks around the country paying attention want to know what we're doing here, and they're paying attention.
How much of what you're hearing of what's going on potentially at the federal level with the incoming administration align with your strategy here? It seems to be, in some respect, complementary.
Gosh, it's complementary with several, exclamation points. It's really the perfect storm of a policy and a philosophy here in Louisiana that got coupled very well with what happened in the election in Washington. Because, Louisiana, I've said this for 10 months since I took this job, Louisiana is incredibly, incredibly well positioned on the energy front to really take advantage of the global change in the way we look at energy, right? And it doesn't matter whether you call it an energy addition, an energy transition, whatever that piece is. The world is looking for opportunities and processes that they believe are cleaner and better, right? So that's a sort of a global posture that Louisiana has a competitive advantage at. Now you couple that with President Trump, at 3 o'clock in the morning on the night he got elected, putting his stake in the ground, reminding everyone that America is a fossil fuel based country, and he intends on creating policies that enhance that. It was just that next level win for Louisiana, because obviously that's been our sweet spot for a long time. So I think, purely from a positioning Louisiana perspective, a Trump administration coupled with a Landry administration is going to benefit us very well. And I just think there's some natural alignment regardless of the politics. There's some very strong natural alignment around the policy.
No doubt. And I think it even is broader than fossil fuels, though, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. It's that, perhaps had the election gone in a different direction, fossil fuels wouldn't have been on the table quite as much. We wouldn't have been talking about that. And Louisiana still has a tremendous opportunity in all things energy addition. It's that we just have the ability to do what we've been good at for a very long time and make it better and stronger and grow it. And then if you also couple that with new technologies and innovation and the other pieces that we as a state are going to be working, but what I believe, I hate to predict, it's a risky business, what's going to come out of Washington, but what I believe is going to come out of Washington, I just think Louisiana is really well positioned to take advantage of how our policies and federal policies can align.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope that you have a great Thanksgiving holiday. Keep up the great work. And if you would indulge me just one time, would you, for me, please, just shoosh Michael Heck?
Don't, Michael. There we go. You got one.
It's like grabbing a cat at the nape of the neck. It just settles me down instantly.
Well, I'm told that you're the only one that was able to do that, Susan.
Well, no one tried hard enough, apparently. But, it was worth it. Thank you all.
Absolutely.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. Thank you for joining us. Truly appreciate it. Michael, real quick,
happy
final
Thanksgiving.
Thoughts. All right.
I'm thankful to be doing economic development in the region, in the state of Louisiana at this moment, because I think it's going to be a tremendously fun and productive end of the year and then years coming up. It feels like we're really back in the game in a really significant way. The stars are aligned, and so we're shooting for them. So I'm just thankful for everybody who's involved.
Well, thank you for joining us. Have a great holiday season, Michael, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too, Neil. Have a great one.
All right, we'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. When we come back after the top of the hour news break, folks, we'll visit with New Orleans & Company President and CEO Walt Leger. Stay with us.